Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High-Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is David Goldsmith, Chief Strategy Officer at WeGo Health. Welcome, David.
Thanks very much, Matt.
So what I always like to do is, before we dive into the topic of the day, is to just ask my guests to be able to introduce themselves and give a little bit of background about who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. So Chief Strategy Officer at WeGo Health, which is a digital health company that focuses specifically on bringing patients and caregivers into the industry to have a greater impact on really driving innovation in healthcare. And I got into this about 7 or 8 years ago, not long after my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. It was thrust into a health journey unlike any I had personally experienced in my lifetime, where I had to, of course, learn a great deal very quickly about treatment options for diagnosis and a number of other things. And it really got me to see aspects of the healthcare system that were, frankly, a little stunning, and ultimately inspired me to want to learn a lot more about how other patients dealing with a significant, you know, serious disease were navigating their care and the kinds of issues they were grappling with. And ultimately, it inspired me as someone who had really spent much of my career in technology. It inspired me to want to shift and focus specifically in healthcare. And my journey since then has really been really focused around patient activism and peer support, building online communities for people with condition-specific diseases who want to benefit from the knowledge of others. And I've never wanted to turn back ever since I got into digital health. This has really been the most gratifying phase in my career.
Yeah, no, it's, I think having that personal connection and that personal drive definitely makes a big difference. Because as you said, you saw an issue that you wanted to be able to tackle head on and have it really inspire kind of the work that you've been able to focus on.
Absolutely. And so, one of the things that we see with a lot of people we work with, is, I'm sure is not a surprise, is that they are incredibly passionate about working in healthcare and working to change healthcare by virtue of their own experience in the system.
Yes. And that's kind of, I think, a good point to be able to raise, because it feels like over the past couple of years, the role of the patient has been changing. So, you know, kind of from, I guess, starting with the experience that drove you in or inspired you into this area, how have you seen the role of the patient kind of evolve in that time?
You know, I think one of the things that's, of course, been incredibly dramatic is just the democratization of information. It's often the case that we talk about Googling things, and a lot of patients and caregivers who are dealing with a significant health issue want to dig deep and really understand what are their treatment options, how have others navigated their care path, what kind of new research is there that could perhaps help them think differently about how to approach their treatment, et cetera. You know, it's controversial, but having access to that information has clearly empowered, you know, literally tens of thousands of patients to be armed with information that they can take into sessions with their doctors, with their care providers, and have a very different kind of conversation than they may have had before. I know even with the treatment that my wife was going through, that there were options that weren't immediately obvious to her based on her discussions with her care team here. And she ultimately, along with myself, started asking a lot of questions of other people who had been diagnosed with breast cancer and who had already been treated, and learning that there were, in fact, other options to consider. And that was partly a function of being able to go online and do a ton of research and also online connect with other patients. So those are really fundamental changes that we, I think, at this point almost take for granted but that have really fueled a lot of what we're seeing in the patient advocacy community now, or people who are doing a lot of work to be incredibly well-informed, connecting with other patients to learn about how they are managing their care, and having a lot more information and support with which to you know, get into a conversation with their providers, and ultimately be hopefully in many cases taking a far more collaborative approach than has been possible in the past.
I think where you started that kind of analysis off was the fact that you have a lot of information resources that are available online, whether it be, you know, actually finding information or being able to connect with people. So kind of picking up on the availability of information first, did you find it difficult to be able to kind of parse apart information that was accurate as opposed to maybe something that was more opinion or just something that was not necessarily appropriately grounded?
To some extent, yes. I mean, I think once anyone starts to do a lot of serious research on the internet, you're invariably going to come across information that is dubious or suspect and clearly needs a lot of serious scrutiny before you would feel comfortable making any kind of decisions based on that. You know, you've probably seen the coffee mug image on the internet that doctors sometimes like to share that says, "Don't confuse your Google search with my medical degree." And I think that's partly because a number of doctors have over the years had patients walk in seemingly armed with data or information that is really not at all evidence-based, but suggests that perhaps there's some cure or some treatment that they stumbled across and ought to try. And, you know, there's a lot of reason to be very concerned about some of the misinformation that's available online. So, you know, part of being a very engaged, very empowered patient is knowing how to do research, how deep to dig, who else to talk to. You know, part of that journey or that path that you're on is learning what questions to ask. And that was certainly the case with my wife. I mean, we were, you know, literally not only spending a ton of time online and on sites that were specifically for people with breast cancer, but we were talking to other doctors as well, people we knew, friends and family, and asking questions of them in order to piece together as best we could what we understood to be the standard of care for someone dealing with breast cancer and my wife's very specific diagnosis. So there's always going to be a concern about the quality or the integrity of the information that's available to you. But that's, I think, at this point, kind of part and parcel of having access to a lot of information and having to be smarter consumers of information. And again, being really diligent about asking a lot of questions. And one of the hallmarks of many of the patient leaders that we work with at WeGo Health is that they are incredibly astute about how to parse the information that's available online and how to help others do that as well. It's a lot of the kind of information and support that you see shared in patient communities, including instances where you see the crowd kind of gathering around and helping to suss out information that clearly is suspect, and helping to, you know, demystify some other kinds of data or, you know, kind of false reports that are out there in order to help others in their community differentiate between good information or outdated information, et cetera. So those dynamics are very much in play.
No, and I think that, as you said, that dynamic of the community being able to help weed out the, you know, the false information or the information that, as you said, maybe was good at one point, but there's better and newer information available now, which it really sounds like it kind of comes back to the other point you made, which is having this information available enables you to ask questions and seek a deeper understanding or seek clarification. So it really sounds like, you know, that both the asking and then the openness to waiting for the response is the real foundation of what has been occurring.
I think that's right. And, you know, misinformation or lack of information is not by any means unique to patients or caregivers. In fact, again, with respect to my wife's treatment path, one of the things that we learned was that the type of treatment that the option that was being presented to her through her local provider here was, it's not that it was, you know, ill-informed, but it wasn't actually a current treatment option. It wasn't, there were standards of care in other cities that we discovered that weren't in fact in play here, which was a little shocking to us. And after doing some additional research, we found that she had really overlooked or hadn't been aware of a treatment option. We only learned about that by virtue of consulting with a doctor who, again, was a friend of the family, who was an oncologist, and who is in a out of Johns Hopkins. And, you know, after talking with him, he encouraged us to speak to my wife's oncologist about this treatment option. When we presented it to her, she said she really wasn't aware of it and would need to do some additional research herself. So, you know, that's the conundrum that I think a number of practitioners find themselves in, that, you know, they're being expected to be on top of all of the latest treatment research or you know, treatment information. And that's probably not very realistic anymore, particularly if you're an oncologist treating people with a whole range of conditions as opposed to being exclusively focused on breast cancer. So it's, I think, another reason why it's so critical for patients to be able to have the tools and the ability to go do this kind of research, to have the you know, the opportunity to come back to their care provider and have this kind of a discussion, and hope that with being armed with, you know, really good data, or, you know, research and you know, sort of the latest information on something, that you can have a very different kind of conversation that ultimately gets you to the right kind of treatment path. And that really needs to be a collaboration and not just a doctor, you know, handing down their diagnosis and treatment and being, and that's really the end of the discussion.
And actually, kind of leading out of that last point, which I think is a very astute one, which is, as you said, it's, you know, there needs to be a collaboration. What have you seen that it facilitates being able to have that collaboration, and not end up with the physician or other provider feeling threatened? Because as you said, I've certainly seen those pictures on online as well of, you know, I think you said the mug where it's, you know, who do you trust, Google or my medical degree? So it's, you know, how do you get past that and get to the true working together?
Well, that's a big topic for sure. I mean, if you've read Eric Topol's book, not I mean, he's written both The Creative Destruction of Medicine, which touches upon this, but his most current book, The Patient Will See You Now. I mean, he really talks about this as being a key challenge in healthcare today, because decades, if not centuries, of assumptions around what that dynamic is between a doctor and a patient, and that these are kind of ingrained assumptions we have about the knowledge being really primarily on one side of the table and the acquiescence on the other. And so a lot of this really, in some cases, I should say, depends on the nature of the relationship you have with your doctor and their receptivity to looking at data or research or findings that you may be able to bring into the conversation, and being open, you know, to hearing about that, to learning more themselves, and to acknowledging that they don't necessarily know everything that you might want them to, or they would be expected to know. So it's very much on a case-by-case basis. But the I think one of the key changes that, you know, we hear a lot about in the patient communities that we're exposed to, and certainly among some of the patient leaders that are a part of our network, is that it's the partly the, again, the access to information that they have and the ability to find very timely information about treatment options and new diagnoses and clinical trials and other things that in the past were pretty much locked away and solely in the domain of the profession itself. So to the extent that you can be informed about those options and bring that into the conversation, it's going to facilitate, I think, a very different kind of conversation. But a second piece of that comes back to the peer support that we were talking about. And, you know, one of the things that I think is incredibly helpful to a lot of people who are particularly dealing with chronic and complex conditions where you have all of the anxiety and uncertainty surrounding that, as well as the, you know, essentially being overwhelmed with information, is to, when you have peers who have already been down this road, who have already had to navigate a similar kind of path in terms of treatment of their condition or how they're, you know, continuing to manage their condition, they're able to provide a lot of support that I think emboldens people to have a different kind of conversation with their provider. So I think it's sometimes it's not just having the information, it's knowing that other people have come before you who have done a great job of navigating their care and who can provide you with advice and support and encouragement so that when you're going through this yourself, as you're working through these conversations with your care team, that you feel like you've got, you know, essentially a community behind you helping to ensure that you feel confident having the conversation.
Right. For those of you just joining, I'm talking with David Goldsmith from WeGo Health about the evolving role of the patient. And kind of, David, picking up on what you just said of being able to tap into the experience and knowledge of people who've gone through this before, I know we had been, you know, before we were able to hop on the recording, been starting to talk about the role of a patient expert, which you've been working on. Mm-hmm. So that really sounds like that concept kind of builds out of the idea that you were just saying of being able to tap into these, you know, individuals who've gone through an experience before. So could you, I mean, is that accurate to say that that was kind of the genesis for the patient expert concept? And then kind of where is that utilized?
Sure. So the concept has evolved, and it really is an outgrowth of the work that WeGo Health has done now for over 10 years to identify people primarily online who are clearly having an enormous impact on how other patients and caregivers are managing some aspect of their care. And the role of these patients is enormous. These are people who are frequently blogging. They're, on average, folks in our network, for example, participate in five to seven patient communities. They are among the most active contributors in these communities. And what we have found is that the industry has benefited greatly from connecting with these patient leaders in order to learn from them, to ask them a lot of questions about how they manage their care, why they've made the decisions they have, what informed those decisions, what are some of their greatest challenges in managing their care, et cetera. And these are people who are able to add a tremendous amount of value to the industry by virtue of sharing their experience and being deeply engaged in their care. We often say that the folks in our network are truly the hyper-connected and the hyper-engaged patients online. That network today is now well over 100,000 people, and they encompass, you know, virtually every health condition and topic. One of the things that's really noticeable is that when you really start to dig into this network and better understand the profiles of the folks, you know, 20% of our network members have advanced degrees. Somewhere between 5 to 8% have professional degrees. In other words, these are people who not only have a chronic or complex condition, but in many cases they may be nurses, doctors, engineers, etc. Who, you know, they're really a microcosm, of course, of our society as a whole. And one of the things that's become more evident to us is that while it's incredibly valuable to bring them to the table with the healthcare industry to get these kinds of insights, we see that there are a number of other ways for the industry to tap that patient expertise and to benefit from their skills and their professional backgrounds. And that's one of the, that is not to say that's the hallmark of a patient expert. A patient expert is someone who brings that kind of experiential learning to the table that is invaluable and very unique kind of expertise in healthcare. But the impetus for launching the WeGo Health Experts platform was recognizing that there are individuals out there, and there are literally, tens of thousands of them, who are not only able to bring their patient experience to the table, but they're able to bring other skill sets as well. And these are skills and professional backgrounds that in many cases are, again, extremely relevant to the needs of healthcare companies. One example I can give you is if you look at folks in our network, many of them are incredibly tech savvy. We have literally hundreds of people who are among, the most savvy social media marketers out there, because in many cases they've built their own online presence and have tens of thousands of followers. So we had an instance with a company out of California, an early stage company that needed to build awareness of its tools to help patients and consumers better understand their options for health care, particularly with respect to price, to cost, and also quality.
Right.
And they were having they wanted to access the skill set of a patient who could personally understand the benefits of that, but also had the marketing, background, the digital marketing background, to reach into his community and educate people about this kind of an option. So they're both capitalizing on that experience that he brings by virtue of being a patient himself, but they're also leveraging his digital marketing experience and working with him to help get the word out about their solution. So those are the kinds of things that we're trying to achieve by connecting healthcare companies now with this kind of expertise.
Yeah, no, your example is very interesting because, as you said, the companies seem to recognize the need for a different perspective and for the input. But, it's also recognizing at the same time that the company still has its own motive behind it. And while it's trying to do the right thing, you always need to remember that a business is a business for a reason. It's not necessarily going to be completely altruistic, but to the extent that you can help influence the direction, that influence how it interacts with other individuals, it sounds like a net positive on the whole.
Absolutely. I mean, the company that had the opportunity to work with that expert patient was very clear that they would hire him again. In the future, they recognize that not only that skill set, but having that very authentic, trusted voice out there talking about the value of this kind of a service is enormously important.
Kind of thinking about that angle to it, I suspect that the patient experts have a real drive to want to have the companies or the providers that might be tapping into their knowledge change their ways, but is there any concern about kind of capitalizing and going in maybe an unanticipated direction from that interaction?
Unanticipated in terms of how that information is shared on the part of the patients, you mean?
I guess more in terms of the company, that the company would try and get the input from the expert, but then at the end of the day not end up using it in an anticipated or the hope for improvement.
Well, possibly. We haven't seen examples of that yet. I mean, the one concern that sometimes does get raised as the industry recognizes the power of influencers and influencer marketing, there has been some concern raised that companies will essentially try to exploit the visibility and the influence of patients who have deep reach within some of these patient communities. And, you know, one of the things that's been very interesting for us to see is that when patients in our network are approached by companies to talk about their solution or their therapy, if they haven't had personal experience with it and can't personally attest to its value, they have really no interest in any way squandering the trust factor that they have literally spent years building with their peers, and have been essentially bristled at the notion of being asked to talk about a solution or something that they're not personally that they can't personally attest to. So that there has been some again questions around that, but we find that the pushback is really on the side of these patients who have who place a premium on the trust they have established in these communities and have no interest in seeing that squandered.
Right. No, I think that's definitely a fair point. And unfortunately, believe it or not, we're already out of time. So David, thank you very much for a great and extremely quick flowing conversation.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you to everyone for listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.